He is both a licensed and certified athletic trainer. Bubba has spent all but two of his years in the profession in the greater Houston area in several settings. He has worked in the secondary school setting, physical therapy clinics, been a physician extender, and is currently an outreach athletic trainer. Working in all these different settings gives him a full perspective of the challenges facing the licensed athletic trainer in Texas. Bubba has spoken throughout the state of Texas on multiple topics and issues. He was presented the Sam Ketchum Outstanding Speaker Award at SWATA in 2005. Bubba is also a past recipient of the Tom Wilson Award through GHATS. He is a member of the TSATA, NATA, SWATA, and GHATS. Bubba is also a past president of GHATS. Everybody, welcome Bubba Wilson.
So I actually, it said for 2 years, I didn't live in the Houston area. For one of those years, I worked out of Beeville, Texas in a physical therapy clinic. That was the longest decade of my life. It was a great job, just was not the place that I wanted to try to raise a family at the time. But I do have some fond memories of that. So we're going to talk about ACL rehab, and I know it's, everyone's like, oh crap, here we go again, but I really want to look at it from a totally different perspective as to how we do it and what we're doing, and hopefully at the end you'll agree that it might have some merit to what we're talking about. So you got to have a financial disclosure statement these days, right? So I have no financial relationships or relevant non-financial relationships with anybody. However, I did get to take a bucket list trip about 3 weeks ago, so I had a financial relationship with the cruise line. We went to Alaska, all right? If you get to go, go. I highly recommend it. The other one is, I know I'm not supposed to advertise or endorse. My daughter had a single drop on iTunes on Wednesday. It's great, and I don't say that because I'm her parent. I say that because I paid the studio the money to make it. So if you like pop music, you'll like this. It's the best one she's done, and it really is the best one she's done. She's got two albums out too, but you don't have to buy them, but please do. All right? So what are my issues with rehab protocols? I think a lot of us will have the same issues with them. It's not a cookbook. It's a guide. Okay? We're not baking a cake. Okay? It's almost like a map. We can get to the same point from a bunch of different roads, but we don't have to take this road at this speed at this time every time. And I think that's where people get in trouble, not just athletic trainers, but a lot of allied healthcare professionals, physical therapists, physicians, and I'm going to badmouth all of them later. I think that's where they, no, I'm not going to badmouth them, I'll just talk about them. I think that's where they get in trouble, or we all get in trouble, is we think, well, I got to do this. This is what it says. And that's totally wrong, and we got to get away from that. Okay? Everybody, doctors and all, like I just said, we just follow that. Well, why do we do this? Well, that's what it says. Well, why are we doing that? Should we be doing that at this point in time? Should we have done it 2 weeks prior? Should we do it 2 weeks from now? Okay, and we're going to get into all that. So the biggest thing is I argue this with doctors all the time that we're working on and people is, why do we x-ray fractures at 6 weeks? Well, biologically, we know that at 6 weeks, in theory, they're healed, right? So do we need to x-ray at 6 weeks? Yes, because sometimes they're not. So that matters as we go along here. And the other way to put it is, not all run at 12, jump at 16 to 20 weeks, and go full go at 20 to 26 weeks post-op. All right? So we shouldn't be doing something on the protocol because it says that's the week we ought to start it. So how did I get to this? So it's not in my bio because it's too freaking long already, but I worked for 4 years for Dr. Walt Lowe. If you're not from the Houston area or the greater Houston area, you may or may not know him. He is a team physician for the Houston Texans, the Houston Rockets, the University of Houston, and NASA, and anywhere else he wants to be, he will be there, or anybody that wants him. He is phenomenal. He is my mentor. I owe him a lot. And this is where this all started, working for him as a physician extender. And then I went to Kingwood Park, and when we talked about this idea with Dr. Lowe about this ACL protocol, we were discussing it. Then I left. I didn't get fired. I left, went to Kingwood Park, and I forgot about it because I just said, we're going to do this anyway, all right? Then I come back to Memorial Hermann and started having issues, and I'm going to tell you what that issue was that came back around, and I went, all right, we've got to do this. And I thought it was going to be about a 3-page document to come up with this new ACL protocol. It's at about 35 to 40 pages right now. So my problem is this. So when I'm working for Dr. Lowe, I was responsible for post-op patients until about the 8 to 10 week mark, give or take. So I saw them in the office, dressing change, motion check, all those fun things that the doctor doesn't need to do that I can do. And then I was responsible for handling all the physical therapy forms and PT notes and PT calls and athletic trainer calls. And what would happen is somebody from a school would call me and say, Bubba, my kid saw Dr. Lowe yesterday. He's 12 weeks post-op and Dr. Lowe won't let him jog, and that's what the protocol says he should do. Okay. Well, how come he won't let him jog? Well, all right, step away from the ledge. Let's look at this for a minute. What's his motion? That's all right. No, give me a number. What's his extension? Let's get more specific. That's about three, lagging 3 degrees. That's significant. Okay. What? How's his swelling? He's got a little bit of swelling. Okay. Can he walk without a limp? No. But you want him to jog? Yeah, because the protocol says it's time for him to jog. Well, that's kind of stupid, is it not? But we do it all the time. And I don't think we do it all the time because we don't want him to get better. I think, like everything else, we get locked into something and that's what we're going to do. So this is what got me thinking about it. So when I came back, when I went to work at Memorial Hermann, when Dr. Lowe called me and said, I want you to come do this, the physicians I work with, and him being one of them, I would get those phone calls again. So I finally said, that's it. I've had enough. We're going to work on this. So what's a normal, quote-unquote, progression in rehabilitation in a protocol, you know, any kind of, let's say, knee surgery for the most part? Well, everybody wants to be Adrian Peterson, right? They all think we're going to get better at 6 months and we're going to be out there functioning again. That's a sales pitch for orthopedic surgeons. That's how they compete against each other. You go to surgeon A, well, you're going to be about 8 months. I don't like that. You're going to be about 6 months. Okay, you do my surgery. He does 3 in a year. You don't want that guy. All right, so they all think they're Adrian Peterson. We all know better. You got the other end of the spectrum, because Adrian Peterson's the man child. He did that, you know, 6 days a week, 4 hours a day, is all he did was work on his knee. You got the other end of the spectrum, the multi-ligament stuff, like the Navarro Bowman out of San Francisco, if you remember that going into the couple years ago. He was a multi-ligament injury. He took over 12 months to come back, and then you see the FTTs and the P3s. That's the failure to thrive kids and those with piss poor protoplasm. Some of them, no matter how hard they work, aren't going to get better anytime soon. Those are the athletes that are always in your training room too. Okay? And the failure to thrive are the ones that just don't care. Eventually they'll give up and you won't have to worry about them anymore. But for a point in time, you're stuck with them. And in the middle, you got the 9-monther, in my opinion. That's the true normal. Okay? These are the normal rehabbers. Gronkowski with the Patriots was 9 months coming back from his ACL. He's a professional football player. That's all he has to do. And it took him 9 months. Okay? Again, he's not Adrian Peterson, and there's not another Adrian Peterson. So I want to go old school with this ACL protocol in essence. I want it to be just like education used to be. And that is, you do the worst satisfactorily, you advance to your next grade. You don't do the work, you repeat that grade or you repeat that class, right? There should be no seat time. Oh, you didn't come in for 2 weeks for ACL rehab? Sit over here and write me a report and we'll just go ahead and let you start jogging. But that's what we do in essence, okay? We're not going to advance because it's that weak on the protocol. That's pointless. I think it's bad. We're going to advance when we're ready. So if we look at the data, it's probably higher now, but somewhere between 150,000 and 200,000 ACL surgeries a year, right? I don't think we're going to disagree that that's a minimum. So are we doing our patients a disservice, these 150,000, 200,000 patients a disservice with our current protocols of saying, hey, you're at 12 weeks, go ahead and jog. Is that bad? Okay, something to think about. Are we harming our professions as athletic trainers, as physicians, as physical therapists? Are we doing bad to our profession at the same time of telling you, hey, you're at 12 weeks, go jog? Don't know if you're ready, but go jog. Does that make us look bad as a profession? My answer is, my personal opinion, not my employer's, is yes. All right? And then what's best for the patient or the athlete as far as rehab goes and return to play? And it all, you know, the buzzword around best practices, is taking him back out there at 16 weeks to jump the best practice for that athlete? Just because that's what we've always done, all right? You're ready when you're ready. So I'll go a little further into this in a minute, but I tell our doctors now, your sales pitch is this. How hard are you willing to work? How fast do you heal? You're ready when you're ready. If you're ready at 6 months, we're going to write you up in a journal article as a high school kid. Okay? If you're ready at 9 months, great. If you're ready at 12 months, that's fine too. You're ready when you're ready. That's what it should be. So I want a criteria-based protocol. Meet these criteria, go to the next grade. I think it's pretty simple in essence to do that. It wasn't simple to create. Thank God I had some smart people with me. So if you look at some of the literature, Dr. Paulos, and if you've ever met him, he's the nutty professor, he's awesome. In 81, he really wrote about the first criteria-based protocol. It was weeks, but it's based on minimum time and specific goals at each phase. But he had minimum time in there. And minimum time's good, but minimum time should realistically be your biological healing, not just an arbitrary number of weeks. Okay, again, we x-ray at 6 weeks for a reason, because we know we're probably close to being healed for a fracture, but are we really? Okay, Adams et al. Out of Delaware in 96 and again in 2012, they have a criteria, the base protocol, but it's not true criteria-based. It throws in weeks as well. So it defeats the purpose in my mind. Wilk in 99 and again in 2012, his criteria was only for return to play. Okay, so we get down here at 6 months and beyond, that's when we're going to throw in criteria. What about for getting off your crutches and out of your hinged knee brace? That ought to have criteria with it too. And Meyer et al. In 06 had one for return to play as well. So again, a lot of people write one for down here on this end, on the end stage, but there's nothing for that other 75%, so to speak, in there. We need to have something there. So again, each phase has a criteria that must be met before you advance. It's based on published research. This is where it became hard. We couldn't just throw something in there because we liked it. We had to throw something in there because we could prove it. And then biological healing is taken into consideration. So on every phase of the protocol, there's the MD approval box. That's what the doctor is saying. I now feel confident that you can go from phase two to phase three. All right? So what's a normal knee rehab progression? Again, we talked about it from a month standpoint, but let's talk about it this way. Tissue healing is important. Okay, that determines our normal progression. How's our tissue healing? How's the bony tunnels healing for where they drilled? Okay, are we having patellar tendon issues if you had a BTB? That's part of your tissue healing and normal progression. What are your weight-bearing restrictions? Okay, range of motion restrictions. All this matters to how we're going to progress. How hard are you willing to work? Okay, so let's look at biology for a second. I'm not going to bore you with a lot of science because it makes me want to fall asleep. Okay, again, tissue healing matters. What type of graft did you have? That matters. Okay, how did it get fixed? Was the fixation good? A lot of times when you work with a doctor, or you see stuff, they just didn't like how the bone felt when they put that screw in there. It's in position and it looks good and it's in the right spot from a legal standpoint that they're not going to get sued for malpractice because they put it, they duplicated the PCL. You don't want that doctor either. But it looks good from where it's positioned, but he just didn't like how that bone felt when that screw went in there. So we're going to slow that kid down, all right? So the fixation matters. Did they have another ligament injury with it? That changes how fast we go, does it not? Meniscal repairs. Small one, meniscectomy, big inside out, open repair. That changes our motion restrictions and our weight bearing. That changes how long until we can progress. So again, if you have an ACL, MCL with a meniscal repair, you're not jogging at 10 weeks or 12 weeks or even 16 weeks. So the protocol from a week standpoint should go out the window, in my opinion. And microfractures as well. Now, the protocol I'm talking about today, we can take in all these issues with it and do the same stuff as well. And I'm going to talk a little more about that. So here it is right here. What do we use this protocol for? We'll talk about ACL, that's our primary. But multi-ligament injuries, it fits. Now, lateral-sided PCL is not included in that. That's a whole different animal altogether. Okay, your meniscus injuries, patellofemoral, just straight collaterals you could do. Lateral-sided would depend. Chondral defects, okay? So in essence, do we not really... our patellofemoral ligament or our patellofemoral issue protocol that we do, if we do patellar protection or whatever you want to call it, we're in essence doing an ACL protocol. Nothing really changes. we all, for a lot of the knee stuff, we're doing the same protocol. So we could really pigeonhole this in and fit a whole bunch of different issues. So let's look at it. We want, what do we want in our criteria? We want the stuff to be published. We got to have our stuff validated. Again, we can't just throw something out there that we haven't looked at and, you know, and say, well, we like it. We don't know if it works, but we're going to put it in there because we like it. And we need it to have widespread use and understanding. It can't just be this one funky little thing that some guy likes that's published and validated, but nobody's using. We want it to be stuff that everybody kind of is fairly familiar with. So let's look at our phases. And I've got one and two together because depending on how you look at it, they can be the same. You got an acute and a functional phase, a unilateral strength phase, and we're going to go through these in depth, all right? And a return to sports phase and a return to play phase, okay? So remember, return to sports is all those agilities and all those other things before we get fired and say you're good to go. We've got to go through those drills. We all know that. So phase one, which is that combo one, okay? To get, we want to have full ambulation without assistive devices. So can, when can we get off our crutches? That's in essence what we're talking about. The next phase is we want to start jogging. We want to start our agility training in the next phase, return to sports. Okay, so here's phase one, without our assistive device, and I'm going to say within that is also when can we get out of our brace. Okay, so the NPRS less than 5, we're going to go over those later, but that's basically the 0 to 10 pain scale, all right? IKDC is the International Knee Documentation Committee form. That's what all the physicians use. Your athletes are filling those out a lot of times in the doctor's office, and they don't know it and all the paperwork that they've got. We want that score to be at 30, all right? Less than or yeah, equal to or greater than 30. Range of motion, passive range of motion and extension, at least 0. Okay, now, let's talk about this for a second. If the good leg has 10 degrees of hyperextension, and we're going to go into it, remember, we don't want the surgical leg to go that far, okay? A range of motion, at least 90, we prefer 110, and the reason being at what? 110, we can cycle, right? Okay, straight leg raises, we want to be able to do at least 30 without a quad lag. So if they can't do 30 straight leg raises without a quad lag, extension lag, they're not ready to get rid of the crutches and the brace, okay? And we're going to do balance error scoring system of less than 5 or less. And we got to have MD approval. Now this one's the easy one. You get that protocol, the therapist gets the protocol after surgery, and usually you get that, hey, weight bearing is tolerated, 0 to 60 progress. That's your MD approval. You don't need to go back to the doctor and say, can we go to phase 2? They've already told you what they've got to do to meet that. Or, I want them non-weight bearing for 2, partial weight bearing for 2, and then progress to full weight bearing. Here's their motion restrictions. You have your times and places to when you now know that MD approval is. Does that make sense? So that's an easy one. So here's the numeric pain rating scale is that one. That's your 0 is none, 10 is the worst, or as I tell them, 0 is nothing and 10 is shoot me and I would feel better. Most high school kids understand that one. And yes, most high school kids, everything's a 10. Okay, so we got to go back and ask them again. That's weird. So Lagerstad and JOSBT in 2014 talks about IKDC, International Knee Documentation Committee. It's a good document because it identifies the athletes who fail to return to play for up to a year after ACL reconstruction. So we're looking at a document that's going to give us an idea of how well we think they're going to do later on. So again, why are we letting him jump here when he may not be ready to jump there? And we can tell by his scores if we're going to fail later on in essence. Not truly tell, I couldn't go to Vegas on it, okay, but it gives us some good information. Remember, we're going to talk about motion. A loss of 3 to 5 degrees of extension / hyperextension, and I'm going to put the caveat within reason on hyperextension, adversely affected the subjective and objective post-surgical results from Shelbourne in 2009. Okay, so they're saying right here, published data, we all know this, if we don't have our extension, we're doomed to fail. Okay, he also said in 2012 that osteoarthritis is lower with those that achieve and maintain normal range of motion. That stands to reason, all right? But again, we cannot overlook it. So phase two, I want to be able to jog. What do I have to do to be able to jog? Well, Mr. or Mrs. Athlete, here you go. This is it. Now you notice it was a 5, okay, on your pain scale. It's now to a 3. All right, so you got to be minimum of a 3, or maximum of a 3, rather, I should say. Your IKDC is up to a 60 now. You should be improving at every phase of this. And if you're not improving, we need to find out why. Okay, knee extension, passive range of motion of 0, or the symmetry. This is where that hyperextension on the good side matters. Again, if they've got 10 degrees hyperextension, please don't be trying to get 10 degrees of hyperextension on the surgical side. You'd have to go WWE off the top rope with an elbow to get that. Okay? Not good for outcomes or your job at that point. We want at least 120 degrees of flexion. We should be improving at every phase. Now, FMS comes in. We've debated this one back and forth, right and left, front and back, top to bottom. We're leaving it in right now. We don't know if 2 is the right number for a minimum score or not. We're looking at the data to see, but right now we think it's okay. We don't know. There's some other things we're looking at. We don't know if these goals are going to be too easy in the jogging part. Veiled test of a minute of single leg squats. So in essence, what you're doing, and I've got a picture, and we'll get to it. Let me just do it that way. And again, you got to have MD approval. So overhead squat, we're all fairly familiar with this, at least know what FMS is. We're not going to have a big course over how to do it up here, but just be familiar. It's part of the functional movement screen. It's based from 0 to 3 off technique alone. We're not putting any load on there. Any pain, the athlete gets a 0. So they could have perfect squat form and pain. They fail at 0. Okay? So that's a good-looking squat for FMS. His heels are not on the board. Okay? Arms above head. No real excessive forward trunk lean. And then we got some crap over here on the other side. Okay? And E and F and D are a lot of our athletes. And those are good squats. Okay? Ask your coach in charge of the weight room. They'll tell you. But that's a whole nother topic, too. Okay? Single leg squat test. That, I don't know why I have that picture in there. I think I was moving slides around. That really should go away. It's the Veil test. Garrison published it in 2012. It's a reliable measure of physical performance following reconstruction of ACL. Okay? This is it. This is the one we're talking about right here. This has a band attached to the arm and stepping on the right foot for resistance. It's a 1 minute squat test. You can give yourself balance with the chair. It's 0 to 60 is your range of motion. We're looking at this because we really want to modify it on some people and go 30 to 60, and that's hard to judge. There's some things we're looking at making visual cues for the person grading it, but we think 0 to 60 might be a better indicator of how well they do. And what you don't want to have happen is you don't want them to drop into valgus, okay? That's really our indicator. Can they stay in line for 1 minute doing squats? 0 to 60. There's some other aspects of the Veil test. We've got portions of these or variations of these throughout the protocol. Here's lateral movement, forward, back. Okay, so, but we just use that squat test, in phase 2. All right, phase 3, when can we start agility? When can I start jumping? When can I start doing those things? My protocol says 16 weeks, and the doctor won't let him do it. He's not ready. So, our pain score is now down to a 2 max. Okay, again, we're improving. Our IKDC is up to a 70. All right, again, we should be improving. They're working on something in our doctor's office right now that when they check in, they're going to check in either a kiosk or on iPads, and they're going to be filling out this, and that's going to drop that to about 3 different spots that the physician can use, our research person can use for this protocol that we're working on, and some other things that we can get these. It's hard for you guys, and that's, I'll go into some of our issues with this protocol in a little bit. Tampa kinesiophobia scale, it's a great thing. I'll talk a little more about it in a minute. Okay, but at least a 20. Heel height difference. Now, we've created an apparatus. Basically, you're prone on the table, knees, or from above the knees down, hanging off the table, and it's a prone hang, and we're measuring heel height difference with a big carpenter like a sheetrock tee and a small speed square, measuring in centimeters that difference. 1 centimeter difference is roughly 2.2 degrees for a point of reference, okay? So, but what do you see? We talked about extension and was important in phase 1, but we're looking at it again in phase 3. Well, we've started jogging. We've got to make sure that we're not losing our motion. If we're losing our motion, we should not be advancing, correct? I mean, am I wrong? If we're swelling, we wouldn't want them to run or jump. We shouldn't be losing our motion. So we've got to continue to check this. If you notice, every phase so far has motion check in it. We're looking at quad strength symmetry of at least 80%. That's involved to uninvolved. That's got its own issues, and we're going to talk about those in a little bit. Y balance test comes in, okay? 4 centimeters or more, we got problems. Indifference each direction. And landing error scoring system comes in, all right? Equal to or less than 5, and MD approval. If we've got those, if we've got, how many are on there? 1, 2, 3, 4. 8, including MD approval. Let's say you got 6 of them, and you go to the doctor, and the only one you don't have is you don't have Y balance. So why can't the doctor, and this is what I like about this, is you can go to the doctor, you've got 6 of these, the doctor says, hey, when you pass Y balance, you can go to the next level, you don't have to make another appointment. Very simple, the kid knows what they have to work on, all right? So Tampa Kinesiophobia Scales, Lentz out of the American Journal of Sports Medicine in 2014, so it's relatively new, but I really, really, really love this. It's a comparison of physical impairment, functional and psychosocial measures based on the fear of re-injury or lack of confidence to return to sports status after ACL reconstruction. So what is the one thing we all hear as they start progressing? I'm scared, right? Well, some don't want to admit that they're scared. You give them this test, it tells you how to grade it. You can find out on your own if you think they're ready to jump. The score is going to tell you if they're ready to jump or jog or go back to playing sport. There's no shame in not being ready. Again, let's be ready when we're ready. Okay, so let's look at quad and ham strength ratios. So Smith in 14 says individuals post ACL reconstruction with weak QF, quadratus femoris, demonstrated altered landing patterns. That makes sense, okay? I might take it a little differently off quad alone, but we know if they're weak, their landing patterns are bad, and that's really what we want to look at. Okay, strength of greater than 90% demonstrated functional performance similar to the uninjured. Well, if my quads are at 90% or better, that makes sense. But we also got to look at hamstrings. Y balance test, we're all familiar with that in one form or the other. So anterior, right, left, reach distance difference greater than 4 centimeters, you're 2.5 times more likely to sustain a lower extremity injury. Okay, and then girls with a composite reach distance less than 94% of their limb length were an increase of 6.5 times of more likely to get an injury. So Y balance is huge. Shows a lot of issues that we need to make sure are corrected and dealt with before we keep progressing them. So there's the kind of high-tech version of the Y balance test these days. Remember, it came off the Star Excursion. We all remember that. For those of us with really bad training rooms, we were trying to find a spot to tape that off on the floor, and it kept getting torn up because every kid walked through it to come get taped. So this is it in action right here. This anterior reach, then that same one would go out to the side laterally, then across back over there, and we're measuring right and left side on all of those tests. So there you go. There's a cross one, the medial. Landing error scoring system, we're probably all familiar with this, but we didn't realize it. It's valid for identifying high-risk movement patterns during jump landing tests. That was published in 09. Now, historically, nobody gets in trouble going up, right? We get in trouble coming down. So I don't know of an ACL that's been torn jumping up, per se. It's coming down, same as that pivot shift on that deceleration. So we've got to make sure that we're not putting them back out there to do these tasks with bad form. We're recreating the demon if we do that. And then alter control of the hip and knee during a dynamic landing task after ACL or a predictor of a second ACL injury. So if their form sucks after their surgery, we're setting them up to fail. That's not our job. That's not what we're supposed to be doing. We should be monitoring that. And so that's why it's in there, and we think it's important. And that was out of AJSM in 2010. And ACL reconstruction patients had worse landing mechanics, okay? I'll buy that. The question is why, and the second question is what are you going to do about it? So landing error scoring, in essence, come off a box, land, load, up into a vertical, and that gets graded, okay? Do they go into a valgus? Are they upright? Remember, the more upright they are, the more they're recruiting the quads to absorb that shock than the hamstrings, and that's backwards. We got to fix that. So we would score that. Okay. So fourth phase, when can I return to my sport? What do I got to do to go? Well, our pain scale, 2. You would think at this point we should be pain-free, but we've had surgery. You're never really pain-free. I've had 4 shoulder surgeries. It's going to hurt. Okay. So we just don't want big pain episodes. Our IKDC is increased to 80. Tampa's at 20. Okay. Heel height difference the same, still 1 centimeter. We're doing a lot of tasks now. We want to make sure that we're not losing that extension. Uninvolved to involved on symmetries at 90. Okay. Quad hamstring symmetry, 55. We can't let our quads overpower our hams. We would like that 1-to-1 number as best possible, quad to ham. Okay. So we've got to look at that. And hop test. We're all pretty familiar with the hop test. You got to pass a hop test at 90% involved, uninvolved. Agility test, T-test, figure of 8. These are scored, timed. You got to complete sports metrics. Is everybody familiar with sports metrics? Who's not familiar with sports metrics? Good. It's a great program. Okay. I've been trained in it. I don't get paid by them. It wasn't in my financial disclosures. I think it's a great program because if you can complete those jumps, physically, you're ready to go. Let me rephrase it. If you can complete those jumps with good form, physically, you're ready to go, and mentally, you're probably ready to go too. All right? And you got to have your doctor's approval. Again, everything's got doctor's approval on it. So I could go to the doctor after surgery, and they say, Bubba, you've done everything, but you haven't completed sports metrics. When you're done with that, you're fired. Good luck to you. Okay? I complete my sports metrics. You send the note to the doctor. He's done it. We're all good. We're ready to go. Okay? So single leg hop test. Let's look at some of the research. 6 months, they did it 6 months after ACL reconstruction. It predicts likelihood of success or lack thereof after 1 year from reconstruction. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? If I can function with the single leg hop test, odds are pretty good. I'm doing well. So my chance of failure, my chance of a second injury, re-rupture, however you want to look at it, go way down. Okay? And in this day and age, with Obamacare and all that, what's it all about? It's outcomes, right? It's outcomes. So they ding the physician if their patient gets an infection from surgery, even though the patient washed it out in the sink at home. Okay? But here's something to think about. If we have this protocol and these outcomes, and I'm the patient and I'm doing bad that I'm 9 months out and I'm still can't jump, we need to find out why. Do I need more therapy or do I need a psychiatrist? But maybe having these goals and this criteria and it's research back, maybe it's the bullet you need to get the insurance company to pay for more therapy or something like that. Okay. So again, if I can do a single leg hop and I can do it well, we feel pretty confident that I can progress back into what I was doing that got me on the operating table. Okay. So remember, it's just a single leg total distance. You got a single leg total distance crossover. All right, we all know this, but I'm going to throw it in. And then a 5-meter timed. Great test. Don't need anything fancy to do that. Agility test. Monroe looks at it in 2011. It's a test used on subjects as a team sport development. We want 90%. Okay. I ought to be able to do these things. T-test, 10-meter run, 5-meter shuffle laterally each way, and figure of 8. We're all familiar with these. This is not anything new. And I'm insulting intelligence, but these are the things we put in to show what we want to be able to do. Okay? Sports metrics, again, I'm partial to it. When I worked for Dr. Lowe, he used it a lot at the end stage of our rehab. All right? Because again, mentally it prepared those kids for what they were going back to, and it gave him a lot of data. If they couldn't finish it, something's going on. We need to back off. We need to talk to the therapist or the athletic trainer and figure it out. Noyes has published tons on this. He's part of it. Okay? Interesting guy if you've ever met him. But he says only sports metrics and PEP intervention training programs, the similar to sports metrics, have a positive influence on injury reduction and athletic performance. Well, yeah, Noyes, it's your program. You should say it has a positive influence, but it actually does. It's a great program. So if you've never seen it or you mess with it a little bit, if you look at what you've got on this is you've got somebody getting ready to jump on the top stick figure. The middle is when they land, And the bottom one is as they're getting ready to go back up. That's a lot of valgus, right? That's a ton of valgus. We should not be allowing that to occur in our reconstructive patients, okay? You can fix that. So what's our plan for this? We want to collect the data and publish it. There's nothing published out there right now from cradle to grave, so to speak, of all criteria-based protocol. Again, there is at the back end of the protocol, but there's nothing in the front. So what we want to publish this. We want to have our UT physicians, because that's who we're partnered with at Memorial Hermann. We want to have all of the orthopedic surgeons doing ACL reconstructions utilizing this protocol. That's a chore. You ever try to get two doctors to agree on something? Try to get 100 to agree on something. All right? We want all our therapists over time in our Memorial Hermann clinics to be using this, so they're going to have to be trained. We want to collect the data. We're doing some of that now on a small scale with four physicians, Dr. Lowe and three of his fellows that he trained, and a handful of about seven therapists at about five different clinics are collecting data right now on this. We are going to end up having, and this isn't a bad thing, so end up having doesn't sound right, but we are going to train school athletic trainers in our area on some of this data collection, because we know it's one of our faults of the protocol. We're not going to get them all in the clinic in a more controlled environment. So we're going to utilize our surrounding athletic trainers at the schools to help us collect data over time. Okay? We're going to have to teach other therapists, not just within our own system, but in other clinics over time that these kids go to. We don't have a PT clinic in some of the southern regions where patients come in and see Dr. Lowe and some of our other doctors. So we've got to go to these clinics that they use and make sure they understand what we're looking for. And we're going to publish this data at some point. So we're going to publish the protocol. We're going to publish the data. We can see 3 to 5 different papers we can put out of this right now, depending on what all we can collect. Okay? So what are the flaws in this? And there are a bunch, okay? And you may see one that I haven't. We're not going to get them start to finish. The way insurance is, it doesn't happen. We're lucky to get some of them to start, okay? And we know some won't finish, but that's why you're important for us in doing this. If you're one of our schools we come to, we need to be able to get good data collection, consistent data collection to the end of this, okay? Manual muscle testing, that's big on this involved, uninvolved quad ham symmetry. Not all our clinics have biodex or isokinetic testing devices. You don't have them in the schools, okay? A school cannot afford a handheld dynamometer. So I'm playing around with two options right now. One's a very redneck thing. My name is Bubba. Okay. Bass Pro Shops, digital scale, goes up to about 100 pounds. It's a handheld dynamometer, is it not? Just not a true load cell. It's a different load cell in reverse. Okay. But the problem is if I'm resisting you, my arm's moving. Very inaccurate number, so you can't be consistent with it. But what we did find, if we put an eye bolt in the wall and attach it to that, the wall, hopefully the wall doesn't move, okay? So we're going to get better data out of that. Once we did that, toying around with it, one of the clinics, that worked pretty well. I'm working with someone right now in the infancy stages to create a iPhone handheld dynamometer. So I won't be able to retire, but hopefully I can pay for my daughter's music. So, all right. Again, we don't have biodexes. We know that. We know we're asking for biodex numbers. What we've come up with and our administration has agreed to, if it's someone in the study that we're collecting data on, or over time, anybody that's in this protocol, if their clinic doesn't have a biodex, they can make a call to one of the clinics that do, our Ironman clinics that we have, which are a different level. They have biodex or isokinetic testing. They'll make a call to them and say, at 3:30 tomorrow, Bubba's coming up to kick. And they go, okay. They roll in, they kick the machine, they leave. There's no pain, there's no issue, we just get it done. So administratively, they've agreed to that. And then poor data collection at sites, okay? And I'm not saying athletic trainers. I can say the damn physician doesn't give us the stuff back that we need him to check off, that, yeah, they're doing well or whatever, or this outlying clinic isn't doing what they need to do. So that's why we kept it small early, to look at some of these flaws and some of these fixes we need to have. And we get it. This isn't the norm. Well, I don't do it that way. I'm not going to change. Well, we probably need to change. If we're just staying the same, that's bad. So I think we need to look at this and change. So maybe we look at it and it sucks that it doesn't work and it doesn't change our outcomes and nothing's different. What we've been doing is great. But if I ask for a show of hands, which I'm not, I think we'd all say probably what we're doing is not the best way to go about doing this. Okay? That's all I got. Thank you.